You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you've had a great week. And I got to tell you, I have a collection of friends that are all comedians who send me the most hilarious text messages, audio notes, voicemails, encouraging me to watch different stuff. A lot of times they'll send me something that's scripted and I'm like, I don't know if you remember my day job, but like, I don't have time to watch Handmaid's Tale right now. But Chris left me the most hilarious, hilarious voicemail encouraging me to watch Extreme Sisters on TLC. And I just had to play it for you guys because it was just so funny. What you need to know is Extreme Sisters is about sets of sisters who are so weird because they're so obsessed with one another to the point where you're like, I think this is like something that needs to be written about in a psychology journal. Like this one set of sisters is probably in their maybe like their 50s. And one of them shaves the other's armpits and will massage her and give her like treatments. It's very strange. And then this other set of sisters, twins, they're dating the same man, sleeping in the same bed. It's almost like there's part of you that wonders, are they acting? Did they think this was like their one shot in time? Like they tried to get like a Double Mint gum commercial and it didn't go the right way. I don't know, but they're so odd. The only place that they belong in the world is on a TLC show. You know what I mean? So Chris leaves me this voicemail and I could not stop laughing and I had to play it for you guys. And then I got a chance to talk to two unbelievable executive producers. I love to hear behind the scenes stories about how a show is developed and what the filming process was like, how long it took, what were some of the most memorable moments of filming. I love those kind of stories. So these are two unbelievable guests. So Eric Evangelista is executive producer of Pig Royalty on Discovery Plus. As you know from my last episode with Reality Gaze, this show we love so much. It's so great. It chronicles the lives of three families and their swine as they compete to have the best and most celebrated show pigs in Texas. So Eric and his wife Shannon are behind Hot Stakes Media, which has created and produced some of the most watched and innovative content of the past decade. They have produced the two highest ever first season series in the history of both Discovery Channel and TLC. And then Jan Motzkin is an acclaimed director, writer, and showrunner of films, series, and docs. His recent work includes multiple projects for Netflix, HBO Max. He's also worked with Academy and Emmy Award winner Alex Gibney. He's the creator and executive producer of Generation Hustle on HBO Max. And this is a great series because it recounts some of the most wildly inventive scams of the past decade. A couple of them I was already familiar with and loved it because I got even more information, but some of them I've never even heard of. And we're talking like Olympic level scam artists. Unbelievable. So it is a great behind the scenes episode. Again, you're going to laugh so hard at Chris. So here we go.
KKC, it's Chris Farah. Hi. Did you watch Extreme Sisters? Let's talk about it. I don't know if you're going to be in Clubhouse to talk about it, so I'm going to give it to you now because I'm going to make my YouTube video, but like, whatever. I don't know if you can like watch that because you're very busy. You have five kids. Okay. Oh my God, that show is insane. Let me just talk about it. The craziest ones are these two Perth, Australian sisters, okay? And they're kind of like Kardashian wannabes, and I have no idea what their actual ethnicity is. It's bananas. They have like really dark hair. Anna and Lucy is their name, and they are very Jerome. Maybe they're on pills. I'm not quite sure, but they definitely have cheek fillers. That's neither here nor there. They want to be the same person, but here's the thing. One of them is a little more dominant about that. And she like obviously has OCD about it. And the other one, I think, just thinks that's what life is. But honey, she doesn't have that problem. Also, one has a mole. And we like don't know which one is which. And also, like, why haven't you taken off the mole? Because everything else, they have to have the exact same. Oh my God. At one point, they're like vacuuming and they have to vacuum in the exact same motion. It's bananas. And when they're talking, it's like they try specifically to end each word the exact same time. It reminds me of that SNL skit with Kristen Wiig and Fred Armisen when they're like that crazy banshee couple that's like, our next record is dropping. Like, here's a hit. And then it's obviously they're improvising it. It's like that, but that's how they talk all the time. But they're better at it because they're like, you know, twin sisters. Okay, so let me also say this. Yes, they have a dude. I'm single, but they have a dude. And that dude's name is Ben. And Ben, again, do not know the ethnicity of Ben. Like, Australian people are crazy to me. I mean, in the face or whatever. And, like, I can't tell, like, what their accents are. Because, for instance, their accents are completely different from their mother's accents. And, by the way, their mom, gorgeous Biddy, is one of those girls who really wants, like, long eyelashes in the bottom. And so she just, honey, she drew them with an eyeliner, like slash, 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 slash. It's like playing ping pong, honey. And it was like she kept the score as eyelashes underneath her eyeballs. Do you understand what I'm telling you? I have to send a picture because it's like very hard for me to describe on this voicemail. Oh my God, this is the longest voicemail. I'm not even done. That's one couple. They share a Facebook account. How do you feel about that? Also, they're obsessed with just like puffy dresses and wedges, honey, wedges, by the way. Wedges, yes, more comfortable than stilettos. But they've been dating this guy for 10 years and like they can't get married to him, honey, because they can't get married like to two people in Australia. They should come to America, you know, and like seeking sister wipe it up, but more like just, you know, live their happy lives. Let me also say this. They don't bone because I guess that's the question. But he bones them both like in the same room and whatever he does to one, he identically does to the other. Okay. Let me also say this. They're OCD and I said that. Like, they measure their individual pieces, like, per bowl. Like, oh, I have 17. Which one do you have? You know, it has to be 17. The whole thing at the end is, like, they go to a dentist and one has an infected tooth and it's, like, been infected for, like, 5 years. And I'm just like, how has that already happened? But whatever. And she has to take it out. And the other one's like, well, you're going to have to take mine out, too. But I will be in pain. And it's like, I don't understand why you have to take off your off, too. Because if she takes out her tooth, just get an implant and then you'll both have teeth in. I don't understand it. But, like, that's the whole crux. By the way, the dentist, very nice man, very ethical, is wearing a cat mask. That's neither here nor there. Okay. Another couple of Extreme Sisters, Patrix and Patricia. Okay, that's what their names are and why their mom just wasn't like, one of you is Pat and one of you is Trisha. Like, I'll never know. They dry brush each other. A whole other thing about Extreme Sisters is, I guess, because I don't have a sister, so you can just tell me if this is right because you have like five kids, is that they like do a lot of self-care for each other. Like, they're like plucking hairs for each other, honey. They're like squeezing zits, honey. They're like shaving underarms. Like, I am fine doing that by myself, but these boobies like dry brush everything. They know every curve of each other. So one of them, honey, I'm just going to say, I think it's Patricia, like, has a little hand deformity or whatever, God bless. And so Patrix, like, was, like, her, like, bully buster in school. But Patrix also, and I could getting their names wrong, Patrix loved playing the violin because she had, like, you know, God bless both hands. They both worked or whatever. But the other one, like, couldn't play violin and she was mad about it. And so she gave up violin. Now that is going to come back later in the story. So then Patricia, like, lives her life. She gets, like, married and she has all these kids. And now, like, Patricia just, like, lives at the house and is kind of like, you owe me. And guess what owe me means? She wants to take them to Orlando. They want to move to Orlando. Why? Because they vacationed in Orlando before, obviously, and enjoyed their, like, three vacations, honey, with a pool slide at a Marriott, like, outside of Disney. That's not what life is. But now this girl is like, no, I need a whole new life. I've dated all the guys around here. They're all trash. So you, sister, we're all moving to Orlando. And the sister's like, I have three kids here and my husband's family. But, like, She has half a hand, you know? So it's like a whole situation. Okay. And let me just say this. There's like two people we didn't meet, like two sets. One's like Christina and Jessica. And I think those were like some biddies, blonde biddies that had like a special because they married two twins. I mean, my God. And the other one's Brittany and Brianna. Like, we don't know yet either. But let me get to Brooke and Bailey. Why so many B names? You tell me. Also, there's no Extreme Brothers on this. I would have enjoyed it. So Brooke and Bailey also start with like plucking each other's eyebrows. However, you can tell it's fake plucking because I've been plucking my eyebrows for so long and they just do that thing where they like take, and it's not even tweezerman. That's another thing. If you like know how to pluck, you use like a good tweezer set. This is like obviously some shitty like CVS. So they just like put it to the skin and pull it out right away. You know, it's fake. I knew it. They have crazy noses, both these girls, but also great hair. So their whole thing is they had like a hard childhood or whatever. And then like the older one is like Brooke and she like always had Bailey's back and Bailey's really young. Bailey, by the way, a virgin. That's like neither here nor there. But Bailey's now living with Brooke and Brooke's okay, husband, Denver. And Brooke and Denver have been married like 1 year and it was hard. And then they had a baby and now it's doing okay. Now Denver has skin like, oh my God, let me just tell you, like Glossier great. He's gorgeous. I think this girl just gorgeous too. But like Denver comes in and he's like, I had to talk to you. We have like some things and problems. Your sister leaves her dirty underwear everywhere and it's disgusting. And it's like, yeah. Also, she sleeps in the same bed with us and she sleeps in the middle. The middle. The little sister sleeps in the middle in between the married couple. And then that becomes like a whole thing. Like, I can't just kick her out of bed because when they had problems, like the little sister like helped raise that like brand new baby. Okay. So then the little sister, the virgin, Bailey's boyfriend comes over. His name is Briar. Can you even believe these names? Briar, honey. Now Briar's okay with the virginity because he has a silver cross around his neck. So, you know, that's okay. I would say this, like, I'm not into those last sisters as much because I can tell there's like a fakeness. And so I just can't, but I'm really into those Perth ones and I want to meet the new other ones. And, I love you. Okay. Bye.
Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kate. I'm a big fan of yours. I'm so excited to be on your show.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. First of all, you're a guy after my own heart. Background in news, you're from Boston. Your wife was an attorney, and now the two of you are like kicking ass and taking names. You've made so many of my favorite series, including Deaf You, and so many shows about the Amish, because I grew up in suburban Philadelphia and used to spend a lot of time in Amish country, went to boarding school in Hershey. I've had way too much shoe fly pie for my own good. And I love that the fact that you have shown the most realistic side of the Amish community. My mom used to complain about them all the time. Do you understand the Stoltzfus family sticks money in their cushions, she used to say to me. She's like, these people, they're running some serious operations. So I'm so happy that you're showing the most realistic side of that community. I don't even know where to begin with you, but we've got to talk about pig royalty. You got to just take it from the top. Where did this show concept come from? How did you find these families? Give it to me.
Okay. So a friend of mine, Ben Ringe, who is a great producer in his own right, he has a first look deal with my company. Ben, if you don't know Ben, he developed Trading Spaces and a
Ben's
lot of
amazing.
Huge.
Amazing.
Oh, you know Ben, yeah. All right, so Ben said, like, I have this family, and he showed me a tape of casting tape of the Boleros from like 8 years ago, and he's like, I'm like, these people are awesome. I'm like, what are these they're great. They're so interesting. And this whole world I didn't know existed. So I like all of these worlds you didn't know existed, whether it's Deaf You, like you mentioned, or the Amish world, or all of these things that, you know, like, you know, I grew up in news and, you know, I worked in news with the age of 19. I just love everything about America, just America, like weird, different things about America that you don't know about, you know, that's right in your face and you don't know about. And there's always, no matter what it is, there's always new things to uncover. So Bennett, but that's how I found him, is through Ben. So we went down there and we started filming, and it was just following the Boleros and some of the younger, and it was going to be their show team. And there's Jordan and Shelley and some others. And as we started to go on, there was this other family that popped up, you know, the Rins. or the Reens, however you know they're pronounced both ways, and Jody and Josh and Cannon and Tyler. And the show was being edited, and we stopped it down a little bit and said, hold on a second. We started looking at the footage and posts and saying, this isn't the story. The story is this competition between these two families. And we scrapped a lot of what we had and re-edited a lot of what we had, a lot of the story, and started to tell the story of what was really going on. And in order to tell that story, we had to really go back and look through some of the footage we had, the pig shows that we had. You know, when you you see the pig shows when they occur, we have several cameras on those pig shows, and there's cameras all over the place, and everybody's mic'd, and it takes hours and hours and hours of producers to go through that footage and listen to everything, you know, everything that's being said. All of the footage, watch all of the footage, every bit of the footage to hear and see. And you can tell that we do that, you know, when you watch the show, especially in episode 7. I don't want to give anything away, but there's a scene in episode 7 where they're the Bolero girls and one of the Reen girls comes over to talk to the Bolero girls in the bleachers. And, you know, that takes a long time to see and to search for that footage and to look and dig for that audio. So anyway, I hope that explains it. You know, it's kind of an interesting way to do a show, but we really, really let the cameras roll and go in afterwards and find the story.
And Ben said he was so confident that when you got the project, that it was going to be done in the best way, and is so happy with the end product. Can't say enough great things about you and about Shannon. I wanted to know how long this filming process took.
We started in September at the Texas State Fair, which was late September, last week of September. And we stopped filming right after Christmas.
Okay.
Of 2020.
Now, give everybody an inside look at how do these shows operate? How much money are they winning? How much does training cost? What's basically the inside look at what this all entails?
So the shows, it depends. Some shows are bigger than other shows. So some shows you can win, you know, the kids win about $5,000. Sometimes they win less than that. Sometimes they win more than that. Sometimes they win a scholarship. It's a confusing world that I'm still trying to figure out because it changes with every show. There are big, big shows. There's the National Swine Circuit, which is San Antonio, which I did film. That took place in February. I filmed that just in case we end up doing more shows. The winner of those shows can make $130,000. You know, those are like the big time shows, and those take place all over the country in every state. But the local shows, which are what you saw on this season, those are like $5,000 and less. And they win a belt buckle. Some of them win a scholarship. But like Michelle said, Michelle Bolero is in her, Michelle and Roy, her husband, who's a great guy. Her daughters combined, you know, they're the best of the best. They won a total of $200,000 in their career. Those three daughters, they won a grand total of $200,000 just showing pigs during their high school years. You're talking about 3 or 4 years, $200,000. And that paid for their college. So you can see why it gets competitive. You see why it gets, you know, a little cutthroat. It combines the world of kind of pageantry, you know, toddlers and tiaras or pageantry, and livestock. So it's a very cool and different world.
What's the most surprising thing that you learned filming this about the culture and the competitive nature of this sport?
Well, I think, you know, look, I think that all of the moms are both the moms on both teams love their kids. They really, really do. And I think that's at the bottom of it. You know, sometimes they come off as, to the viewer, is crazy, right? you're like, these parents are crazy. They're nuts. You know, they're that, whatever. But I know for a fact that they love their kids a lot. And it comes out in different ways. The kids react differently to them. You know, you see that on the show. Michelle loves her kids just as much as Jody loves her kids. Jody's kids react differently than Michelle's kids react towards her. That's for sure. You know, you can tell. But it doesn't mean that Michelle doesn't want the best for her kids. Like, she is a good mom. Like, regardless of what you see on that show, like, or how it's perceived, like, she's a wants nothing more than the best for her kids. Like, she's a great mom. She really is. She's a really, really loving person. And her husband's a great guy. You see her husband being a great guy in episode 7 a lot. Like, you can really tell when, like, Michelle's gone and she's homesick and Roy's there to kind of take over the team. Like, he's a great dude. He really is. And the dads on both sides, and you'll see that in episode 8 in the finale, how they're different. That really stands out, how the dads handle things differently than the moms. And it speaks a lot to, it reminded me a lot of, this is a weird analogy, but it reminded me a lot of the ending of the Bad News Bears. Did you ever see the Bad News Bears?
Of course. Ah, classic. Yes.
Yeah. You know, like, how the parents are crazy and, like, it's the kids at the end that are, like, just having fun and just want to have fun. And, like, Nugget and Cannon, they just want to have fun. And in episode 8, you'll see a little bit of that, too. It's, like, a larger point that those two kids make. So it kind of reminds me of that a little bit, too. You know, it's like the parents want it so much. They love their kids so much. They're living out what they missed out on so much. And to a degree, we're all guilty of that. You know, as parents, I am too. My kid plays hockey. He's 6 years old, and I'm a little bit of a lunatic with that too.
Oh, no, I am absolutely crazy. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, you know, you can't help it, you know? So I think that's what makes that show so, and you just can't, you know? You're just competitive. And, you know, as much as you want to try and say you're not, you are, you know? So
how are the cast members dealing with this newfound fame? Because they're from this really rural area, and now people all over the country, if not the world, are trying to watch the show and to learn more about them. That must be pretty difficult, yet exciting at the same time.
Yeah, they don't, you know, look, as with any first season show, it's hard for them to handle, you know? They don't take criticism too well. You know, before we do any show, we always tell people, like, don't look at social media. You know, it's just, you know, you're looking at what 70 people say on Twitter, and there's millions of people watching this show.
That's right.
Who don't think that way. But that's easier said than done. People do take it personal, and some people can say some pretty mean things. But, yeah, you know, I think now as the season goes on and on and on, they're handling it a little bit better, and people are recognizing them and taking pictures with them. And the show's a big hit, and people really like it. And, you know, I think, you know, when they go out into, you know, if they get on a plane and go to Las Vegas or go somewhere else on vacation or wherever they go, like, they're going to be, you know, they're going to realize that, you know, people really love me, people really like me, and, you know, there's a lot of fans of the show out there. So,
and there's also a real heart to the story, like learning about how the Reens took in Tyler and his love for the parents and how he calls them mom and dad, the way that everyone sort of loves Nugget. I mean, there's a real heart to the story, but also a real humor to it because of the comments that they make, the underhanded comments. I think it hits so many points. I think you guys have done a masterful job. It's really good.
Thanks a lot. I mean, we take a long time to go through all of the footage. We watch every bit of the footage. You know, I mean, I'd say that on every reality show that you shoot, that you see out there, no matter what it is, and I know that you watch pretty much everything, right?
Right.
Like, every show that you watch, I guarantee you there's great stuff that you know. it's just a producer who didn't take the time, or an editor, more importantly, that didn't take the time to look at all the footage. Mm. You know, you have to look at every bit of footage. You have to really do your job and not be lazy. You have to look at everything, every little piece of audio. When there's no video, you have to still see, well, is there any audio here? Was the audio guy rolling when the camera guy wasn't rolling? You know, was there, you know, and vice versa, you know? So you have to look and search for everything. You have to be extremely thorough. And you have, you know, if you want to take this job seriously and you really want to tell a full, complete story. So no matter what the show is, I guarantee it. And you and I have both watched some really bad shows out there, right?
Yes.
Like, I'm sure they missed out on something, you know? Like, they missed out on complete storylines, mm-hmm. you know, like complete storylines just by not watching all the footage.
Yeah. Okay. So the thing that I think is makes you guys so great is your background, because you worked in news and she worked in law. And I think that for you, it's like the constant pursuit of the story mixed with Shannon's ability to get information out of people. Right?
Right.
Given her background. Yeah. So what do you think personally is the reason that you guys are, why do you think that you're so successful as a team?
So my wife is really good at interviewing people. So season one of Breaking Amish, I saw that because she was a trial attorney, mm-hmm. You know, and then she started working with me, and she show ran season one of Breaking Amish, and she would, you know, do the interviews with the Amish kids, and she would grill them. And I would, you know, like they were, and I'd have to step in. I'd be like, Shannon, you got to chill out. Like, you know, like these kids are like crying and stuff. You got to chill out. Like, you know, but she like, so she's really good. Like, she's awesome. And she's, you know, like you, she watches everything, you know, like, dude, everything. That's really the key to being a good producer. Like, you'd be an awesome producer. The guys you had on your show yesterday, the reality gay podcast, like, they'd be great. Like, they watch everything. Like, they'd be great, like, to be TV executives. Like, it's really like 90% of it is, what do you watch? Like, do you watch literally everything on TV, or close to everything? You'd be amazed at how many producers don't watch everything, you know? They don't watch TV. It's like amazing. Anyway, but what we do really well is I love like American stories of like weird places, or all those, like, if you tell me a story of like some urban legend of some hill you're not supposed to go on,
right.
Like, where like some, like, oh, you don't go on this, but you go to this place and like there's like these weird people who live in this area. Like, I'll go.
Oh, I'll go,
like,
too.
Try and find it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, awesome. I'm like, what snacks do we bring?
Yeah. So trying to find these different stories that you've never heard of, or different things that you think seem boring, like something super duper boring, but with a twist that someone's taking really, really serious. Like right now we're doing a show about the World Jigsaw Puzzle Championships.
Oh, cool.
And the people involved are out of their minds. It's, you know, crazy. They're like, but they're great people. They're like super smart, but super interesting. It's super competitive, super competitive. You know, all these different weird worlds that seem boring, but they're not. They're like, everybody's super competitive and super interesting. And as far as my wife goes, she's super creative and super and very, very smart. So, and a very good interviewer.
Well, I can't tell you how much I love the show. It's so freaking good. And just to tell everybody, go back and watch Deaf You on Netflix. I love that you were able to cast for the show because you're... production lawyer's wife happened to be a translator, and that led you down this whole rabbit hole of finding this incredible cast at Gal Gadot. I mean, I love your pursuit for the story. I have such respect for you, and I can't wait for all the upcoming stuff you're working on. If you go to your website, the Hot Snakes website, you will see all of the projects they have ever worked on, and you will have your mind blown. Listen, I'll join the fan club. Get some t-shirts. This has been a real pleasure. How can people follow you?
On Twitter, Hot Snakes Media, and then I guess that's it. I mean, I don't know. You could follow me. Come to my house, whatever, but I'm around. Just watch. The episodes drop on Tuesdays on Discovery Plus. Return to Amish is on TLC still. It's on its 10th season of the Breaking Amish franchise. That's on Monday nights at 9 on TLC. You can watch that too.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks a lot, Kate. Thanks a lot.
Jan Motzkin is an acclaimed director, writer, and showrunner of films, series, and documentaries. Recent work includes multiple projects for Netflix, HBO Max, Robert Downey Jr., and Academy and Emmy Award winner Alex Gibney. Jan is a big deal. I don't know how I roped him into doing my show, but I am thrilled. He has created, executive produced, and directed multiple episodes of Generation Hustle. It's a new doc series for HBO Max, which you guys have heard me talk about modern con artists. I don't know. There are many things that I love in this world. I don't know if I love anything more than a con artist. How far would you go for power, fame, and fortune? Generation Hustle features outrageous and high-stakes new stories about brilliant and brazen young individuals, some of whom go too far by pulling off the most wildly inventive scams of our time. Jan directed 3 episodes, and I'm dying to talk to him about this incredible project. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Kate. I could not have asked for a better introduction.
Tell me why this project put the wind in your sails. What was it about this one?
Well, so I created the show, and you know, it was about a year and a half or 2 years ago, and I think we just live, well, look, there's a few things. One is, you know, con artists and scams and frauds are a part of the American fabric, right? They've been around, this is nothing new. They've been around for 100 and more years. P.T. Barnum, Andy Warhol, you know, Bernie Madoff, you know, invention, reinvention, being somebody else. Talented Mr. Ripley, Patricia Highsmith, Catch Me If You Can, Usual Suspects. I mean, you know, the list goes on, but it's something, you know, to pull off a scam or a con or a grift has been part of my imagination and obviously and writers and filmmakers and storytellers' imagination for years and decades. And I think there's something that's happening now while it's not new. There's something that's happening with social media and the internet that just makes it so much easier. And because it's so much easier, there are so much more of it. And because there's so much more of it, there's also, we're also so much more aware of it, right? So it's not like, you know, sending some kind of pyramid scheme to your friends that live on your block. You know, you can just do it all from your phone. And so I love the idea of, I also like the idea of telling a true crime story that doesn't have a gun or a death or a murder. And so, you know, there's movies like, you know, everyone has probably seen Fire Fraud and the Fire Festival and stuff like that. And it's, you know, we had a president who arguably did or did not do certain things. And so, you know, we're having a cultural moment or decade. And I just love people who are creative, you know. These creative people happen to be criminals, most of them, but they're really creative and they get away with it. And I think that's fun to watch as a viewer.
Yeah. I mean, think of all the people that are lying on Instagram, creating a totally fabricated version of narrative of their own life.
Totally. I mean, look, so, you know, you start with money, right? Everyone wants to make money. That's a starting point, of course, but it's just the starting point. You know, and so I think I was interested and we were interested in doing something both deeper and broader and also more specific, right? Money's the starting point, but it's also about status, right? It's about, you know, being somebody that you're not. Maybe you're a poor kid from a working class or lower class neighborhood, and you want to be just, you know, you want to be famous, or you want to be like your school friend who's maybe has more than you, right? It's also about identity, right? Man, woman, black, white. It's about class, you know, and then there's like deeper psychological issues. So it's just, it's about so many things that's kind of wrapped up into it. And you see across the series that, you know, it's 10 episodes, and it's each story is a standalone different story. So it's nice. You can watch 1 hour and that's it. Or hopefully you watch more, but you get one story in an hour. And each one, while it has a similar theme, you know, it's about a scammer or a con artist or a fraud doing it in a cool or interesting or unusual way or original way. Each episode explores a different world, fashion, tech, you know, Silicon Valley, Hollywood, you know, Instagram, rap music. You know, we have an episode in Alabama, you know, with a guy who tries to set up basically like a tech incubator in Alabama. I mean, it's basically like the Music Man in Alabama. You know, we have an episode on WeWork, you know, and so going back to your question, you know, we're interested in sort of this idea of con artists, but, you know, we looked for a diversity of stories, right? So we wanted to show men and women, black and white, but we also wanted to show well-known stories, buzzy stories like Anna Delvey, you know, maybe one of the most famous stories of the last couple of years, right? A young woman who seemingly came from nothing, who pretended to be a fake German heiress, right? And got a whole bunch of money out of it and got a whole bunch of fancy famous friends out of it, and then was caught, went to jail, and like, she's still scamming. I mean, you know, maybe she even scammed us because look, she got basically a TV show out of us and out of Netflix and out of other places, you know. And then we have stories like WeWork, which is a really well-known story. We have the Hollywood Con Queen, which is a pretty well-known story and an unbelievable global kind of crime caper. But then we were also interested in lesser-known stories and finding discoveries, right? Like there's a story about the one I mentioned called The Alabama Exit, directed by Martha Shane. There's a story about a guy named William Bakeland, you know, basically this working-class kid in Birmingham, England, who came from nothing, pretended to be a billionaire aristocrat, you know, the heir to he pretended that he was the heir to the inventor of plastic, right? You know, like a billionaire heir, and he scammed, you know, about $1 million from this really unusual group of wealthy, extremely rich world travelers. And he was like 22. And then he disappeared. You know, and then there's a guy named Jeremy Wilson in another story, The 23 Lives of Jeremy Wilson, directed by Jeremiah Crowell. And, you know, this is a serial con artist, this guy, Jeremy Wilson. You know, he's assumed the identity of an IRA fighter, of, you know, just the most fabulous, fabulous things you can think of. And so they're like, they're good at it. You know, these people are just good at it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they will be rewarded, because not just with this series, as you mentioned with Anna, like they'll have a movie like Catch Me If You Can, because they're such extraordinarily creative people.
I know. And so much of what I thought about and what we all thought about as a team is, well, are we glorifying them? Are we telling their story? You know, are we taking this too far? And at some point, I think very early on, at least I realized, like, we're just telling their story. And if some people think that we're glorifying it, then, you know, we don't go out of our way to do it. We're telling a documentary story. I mean, you know, and to your point, maybe the biggest sort of meta scam of it all is this guy named TJX6, the scam rapper. You know, he's this like 19-year-old kid from Detroit who is a scam rapper. He raps about scam. He tells people how he's doing it, what he's doing, how he's making this money illegally, who he's taking it from, you know. And, you know, we made a whole film about him, Yemisi Brooks, the director. And, you know, it's still unclear. Like, people are watching it and thinking, wait, is this still part of the scam? That he's, you know, that there's a document, is he scamming the filmmakers? You know, is he really a rapper? But, you know, you go online, you go on, you know, Twitter or Instagram, and you, like, you, he has concerts, you know, like he makes music, you know. We don't know. So we don't know what the truth is. Well, we do know what the truth is. But the point is that they're really good and they're fun to watch.
So of the three episodes that you directed, tell me for each episode, what's the one part of the story that you can't get out of your head? So start with number one, Hollywood Con Queen.
So Hollywood Con Queen, you know, essentially is about this mysterious con artist that convinces, in my version, four aspiring artists to go to Indonesia on what turns out to be a fake film production. They're offered the job of their life, like their big break. You know, we've all gotten that call at some point. And they go and they end up realizing at some point that they've lost a whole bunch of money and the whole thing is a scam. I think with that one, the most, which to me is like the most unbelievable story of them all, because it's got so many twists and turns. And what I think is the most memorable is how much detail and how much work and how much, like, how good the con artist was. I mean, if and we talk about it in the film, if he put in, you know, we didn't even know if it's a he or a she, but if the con artist, like, just applied his talent for good and not evil,
right, you
know, they'd, like, be, like, a great Hollywood producer.
Yeah.
One of the victims says, like, the notes that I got on my script from them were really, really good.
Yeah. Which,
you know anything about Hollywood, you know, is not always the case for a studio executive. We had good studio executives, but I've heard from other studio executives.
Exactly. WeWork, I mean, that story is bonkers. What's the one thing about that story that stays with you?
I think Adam Newman, who's the founder and the former CEO who's now gone, of this $47 billion unicorn company, he is... I always heard how charismatic he was and how magnetic he was, but that's just something I read. And then when I started researching and talking to people and watching him, you know, watching a lot of videos of him and listening to interviews, I was completely entranced by him. You know, like, somebody would ask him just such a, like, Adam, but what you're doing is a fraud. You know, I'm right. Simplifying it, but they called him out on it.
Yeah.
And he came up with this answer so quickly and so effortlessly and seemingly on the spot. And when I listened to his answer, I had to stop myself because I was listening to him and I thought, oh yeah, okay, he's right. No, it's actually not a crime.
Right.
His answer makes sense. Yeah. And then I had to check myself and think,
Jan,
wait,
pull it together. Yeah,
exactly. Just slap myself, get it together, man. Because and then I realized, okay, that's how he convinced, you know, Jamie Dimon and Masayoshi Son of SoftBank, and you know that's how he got billions of dollars for his company.
And then William Bakelin, I read this and I wanted to know if this is true. Did he talk to you guys for the year and a half, leading you to believe that he might actually appear on camera?
Yeah, so I didn't put in everything that I could into the show, but I met him. We wrote each other many, many email correspondences, which were insane. I mean, they were colorful and they were interesting and they were weird and they were scary and they were, like, charismatic. And for about a year, you know, we developed a pretty strong relationship. We talked over we didn't talk over the phone, but then my producer, Claire Vance, and I, we went to England about a month or two before we shot, and we met him. And he agreed to meet with us. And even when we arranged to meet at a restaurant at this local Italian place in Birmingham, and even when we flew over, we spent the money, we flew over there, we got to this restaurant, we were still sitting there waiting for him, and we thought, there's no way this guy is going to show up. And he came in, and we had a 3-hour lovely, amazing dinner with him. And we spent the better part of 2 days with him, you know, but then it ended up being this crazy negotiation, which I don't know if it was true or not, but you know, he asked for $1 million to appear on the show.
Oh God.
He asked for three things, actually. $1 million that we shot at a location or an estate of his choosing, and that he be interviewed in the chair of his choice. And so we said no to the money, We said the location we can work out, and we said yes to the chair.
But then he didn't show.
Yeah, and up until the very morning that we had it all prepped for him, we had a whole set ready for him. It was a beautiful set, and we still thought he would show, and he didn't show.
Wow. Has he watched this yet?
I don't know. We sent it to him.
Yeah. I'm sure he's watched it. I mean, these people are all narcissists, right? So, of course he would watch it.
I can't believe that he would not watch it.
I mean, come on, right?
I mean, like, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you watch a movie that they made about you? Well, I don't know. Would
I don't know. Maybe behind a bush, like peeking through bushes. I don't know if I could. But that's because I'm introspective and so are you. You know? They have a totally different makeup. I feel like all of them are similar to Real Housewives or Bachelor contestants. They're all the same kind of makeup.
How so?
Well, they're all trying to convince us that they're someone they're not. And they're all brazen and all delusional. You know? It's kind of the same makeup.
Yeah, yeah. And they have this like deep need for attention.
And validation.
Right? And validation mm-hmm. and fame. And, you know, like power, but not like power to, you know, necessarily run a giant company. Just like they want to be the master of their own little
yes,
universe, right?
Exactly. Should we do this for a TED Talk? And should we get some sponsorship or, I don't know.
I thought this was it. This is
oh,
a
okay,
TED
good,
Talk.
Good, good. Well, tell me what you're working on now because you work on the best projects, the best.
Oh, thanks. Well, so I do both narrative and documentary. I'm writing a movie right now, which I'm going to direct next year. It's a kind of a comedy. It's kind of like a Being John Malkovich
oh, cool.
type film.
Oh, good.
So I'm doing that. And I have two doc projects in development. I'm doing one project with Antoine Fuqua. And then I have a feature doc that hopefully we'll go towards the end of the year. So
you've really been slacking, basically.
You know, I don't know. It's the last couple. we produced this series during the pandemic. We
unbelievable,
spent it all.
By the way. I can't even believe you pulled it off.
We can't believe it either. But we just put our heads down and didn't think about it. And so we spent actually a year doing it all. You know, during the pandemic, and then I think after that we all. Me and I know everyone on the team, we just, I think, needed like just a moment of Zen or maybe 7 moments of Zen to not do anything.
Yeah.
But now we're ready to do something else.
Well, tell everybody where they can follow you.
So like as somebody who created a show about social media, I'm a terribly unsocial media person, but people should watch the show.
They will.
You know, obviously it's on HBO Max and, you know, you can get that wherever HBO Max is shown. That's it. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time and, gosh, what an awesome, awesome series. Well done.
Thank you so much, Kate. Thanks for watching and thanks for having me on.
I want to thank Chris and Eric and Jan and remind you, hey, if you love the show, click subscribe and leave a 5-star review on iTunes. And you can also jump into the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey. You can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. My Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. I'm now on TikTok at It's Kate Casey. I have a Patreon page with bonus episodes this week. I have a whole bonus episode with Kiki from Talk of Shame about The Real Housewives and Bravo. And then, of course, you can find me on Clubhouse at Kate Casey. I host my own room, Watch with Kate. I also am an administrator for Club Bravo and Podcast Secrets Revealed. And I'm hoping that you'll check out my other episodes in the last few weeks. I've had some unbelievable guests. And guess who I have next episode? Lala Kent from Vanderpump Rules.
Listen to the 48 Hours podcast for shocking murder cases and compelling real-life dramas from one of television's most watched true crime shows. Go behind the scenes of each episode with award-winning CBS News correspondents and producers in Postmortem, a weekly deep dive. Listen to 48 Hours wherever you get your podcasts.